The magnificent Krekka hurried down the command wag's narrow corridor. In his arms was a violently twitching bundle of limbs. A heavy head leaned against his shoulder. The rest of the Magus's body was as light as a feather. All hollow stainless steel replacement bones and Teflon joints. Having to actually touch the creature he so feared made his skin crawl. In order to keep from vomiting at the stench, Krekka had to make a conscious effort to suck in every breath through his mouth. The Magus, who was fully awake as Krekka deposited him on the autopsy table, paid no attention to the battle outside or the doubtful future of Gert Wolfram's world-famous Carney show. His only concern was ending his own pain and ensuring his own immediate survival. The steel-eyed monster hadn't completely escaped the dozen or so rounds that had imploded his private viewing box's mirror. Momentarily frozen in his recliner chair, he'd been caught in the hail of lead. The Magus had managed to turn and bail from the chair. He'd hit the floor with a dull thud, barely able to crawl, and spurting vile-smelling internal fluids of various colors and densities. Krekka couldn't tell whether any of the wounds were fatal. If the Carney Master had been sure, he would have left the thing to die alone on the floor. Even now, Krekka would have chilled the bastard himself if he could have been sure of pulling off the deed. Though the Magus was obviously seriously injured, there was no way to judge his ability to defend himself. It was widely rumored that once his metal jaws clamped shut on something, they could never be pried loose, holding on like grim death until the second coming. In the end, what stayed Krekka's hand was his fear of failure and its consequences.
Roll the tool cabinet over here.
Krekka unlocked the wheels of the tall, red, multi-drawer toolbox and quickly pushed it to the side of the table. As he did so, he saw that the Magus was using both hands to compress one of the prominent artificial veins that festooned his chest. Between his fingers, the steel flex piping oozed what looked like dirty transmission fluid. The creature's left leg spasmed violently. A mechanical servo above the synthetic knee joint had been damaged by a bullet hit. There was a deep dent at one end of its titanium housing. It leaked an oily green liquid mixed with blood. The injury made it impossible for the Magus to control the leg. In its stainless steel cage, the Magus's human calf muscle seized up into a rock-hard lump, sinews straining, real veins bulging. Then it relaxed. Then it seized up again, as if it had a mind of its own. The seizures infected his entire body. Even the Magus's face convulsed madly. The Carney Master could only stand there in the shambles of the big salon, grim-faced, trying not to show his impatience and growing concern over the deteriorating tactical situation while he awaited further orders from his commander-in-chief.
Give me a speed wrench!
Krekka handed over the adjustable crescent. With wet steel fingertips, the Magus fitted and tightened the jaws of the wrench over the coupling nut on the ruptured steel mesh vein.
Replacement tubing, third drawer of the cabinet, fast! I'm losing pressure to my head!
The man grabbed a 12-inch length of pre-assembled tubing from the drawer and ripped it free of its hard plastic shrink wrapping. The Magus loosened the nuts at either end of the broken vessel.
Finger, here!
He indicated the lower end of the vein, where it joined a stub of rigid steel pipe. When the Magus freed the bottom coupling, Krekka jammed his thumb over the threaded hole, stopping the gush of tranny fluid. The Magus fitted the new coupling and vein to the top, torquing it down. After he had Krekka move his thumb, he attached the tubing at the bottom. This repair completed, the steel-eyed monster turned his attention to his madly jerking leg.
The Magus, sir? I don't think our people are faring too well out there.
Let Furlong deal with the rad-blasted dirt farmers. I need your help to deactivate the servo's internal power supply. I can't afford to lose any more of my calf muscle.
Right.
There's a balance, precarious at best, between my living and non-living parts. I know you think that eventually I'll become an entirely mechanical being, but that just demonstrates your profound ignorance of the energy dynamics of biological systems. The steel and plastic parts I've accumulated over the years allow me to survive, but they're clumsy and inefficient, and their replacements are only useful below a certain number. Above that number, they become a serious liability. My ratio of human tissue to mechanism is already so low that if I exert myself to any degree, the nutrient supply to the living flesh is challenged, and I risk massive cell death of my remaining tissue.
I see.
You don't see shit.
You're right. I don't.
The Magus then barked more orders at Kreka, demanding a succession of tools from the rollaway box. The titanium housing on the servo had been partially crushed by the slug impact, and two of the retaining bolts had been badly twisted. The removal of the outer case not only required Kreka's hands-on assistance, but that he sit on the ankle to pin it down on the autopsy table while they worked. The bent case bolts proved difficult to extract. As the moment stretched on and the din of blaster fire continued, Kreka's urge to look out the window grew until it became almost unbearable, but he couldn't leave the operation. As the Magus worked on one of the two bolts with a socket wrench, he cursed Ryan Cotter.
That bastard did this to me! That one-eyed son of a swampy jolt whore!
In Kreka's opinion, the cyborg had done it to himself by insisting that One Eye and his son sit in the tent where he could watch them die. And he had done it to the rest of the carny by insisting that the looting begin before the mass chilling had been completed. If Kreka knew nothing of biology, from his life experience roving through the Deathlands, he'd acquired a fine grasp of what made people tick. It didn't take much to realize that the Magus took an unholy pleasure in playing the puppet master. The steel-eyed monster's idea of fun was diverting and deceiving the doomed suckers in the gas tent, while his crews stripped their humble cabins clean. The Magus had assigned 25 Rousties to the task, supervised by Furlong. Dividing the force had been a big mistake, but it was understandable. The Carney had run this operation successfully so many times that once the crowd was seated, the canisters in position, and exit guards in place, all the rest seemed a sure thing. The tent was Kevlar and couldn't be cut or torn with anything less than a blowtorch, and there were armed roustabouts to seal off the only way out. The Magus hadn't even considered the possibility of a mass breakout, so he hadn't been prepared to defend against it. Nor had he considered the consequences to follow with all the Vil Secmen alerted, and everyone older than 12 packing a blaster, and the good folk of Bullard catching them in the act of looting. Given the switch in odds, it was no surprise to Kreka that the whole thing had gotten way out of hand in a hurry. Some of the crew had been chilled in the tent, which left another 20 or so to guard the wags. And that was before the shooting from the villagers started. There was no way of telling how many of his people were still alive. Certainly not enough to beat back the farmers. In which case, the best they could hope for was to exit Bullard with whole skins, which meant abandoning pretty much everything to escape, and doing it before they were overrun. As the Carney Master finally wrenched free the bent bolt, it occurred to him that even now the Magus was jerking his strings, making him act against his own interests, and that there was nothing he could do about it. Once the cover to the servo was off, the Magus attacked the leads to the micro-nuke battery that powered the unit. The ruined device couldn't be replaced, there was no spare on hand. A new one needed to be machined from titanium bar stock, something that couldn't be done in this vill, or anywhere else in Deathlands that Kreka knew about. There weren't any functioning precision machine tools readily available. Even if there were, no one was alive who could figure out how to run one. All the Magus could do was shut off the unit. When the battery connection was broken, his calf muscle relaxed, but without the servo to coordinate its movements, the half-steel leg was just so much dead weight. The Magus didn't seem worried. One leg or two, he always managed to get away. Jump dimensions, or time-traveled, or whatever it was that he did. To get himself a new servo made, Kreka thought, as he hurried to the salon's rear window, maybe the Magus would jump backward in time, to before the nuke cost. One glance across the compound told Kreka his worst fears had come true. Everything had gone wrong. Most of the looters lay sprawled on the ground. As the Vil Sec force advanced on the three parked wags, blasters blazing, one of the wags swerved out of line and came roaring his way.
What the fuck is that?
Furlong raged from the Winnebago's swivel-mounted driver's chair. The man, who was about to dump an armload of spoils into the stripped RV's built-in booty bins, froze as the head roustie lurched out of the shabby throne and bore down on him. Furlong snatched a hair painting, made of twisted and braided lengths of human and animal hair in different colors, knotted into flowers and vines. It was stuck to a square board with little gobs of translucent yellow glue.
This shit is worthless. So is this. And this. And this.
Furlong grabbed other items from the roustabout and tossed them out onto the ground. Handmade wooden eating utensils, raggedy clothing, holdout boots. In a matter of seconds, he'd stripped the man of his loot. The only items the foreman didn't throw out were a handful of dubious pre-dark trinkets, a broken metal wristwatch without a band, a pair of thick glasses with scratched lenses, and some junk jewelry with stones missing from the settings.
Haul back another bunch of crap like that and you'll be digging graves. I'm not going to warn you again. And you tell the others the same. We only want tradable stuff. No more of that garbage.
Furlong lumbered back to the captain's chair, where he could oversee the grunt and carry work of his subordinates, what he did best. Every time Rousties returned to the RV, he gave them the hard once-over, looking for suspicious lumps under their clothing, making sure they weren't hiding any valuables. But the pickings from Bullardville had been pathetic. The clothing was patched and threadbare and reeked of composted human manure. The flatware was roughly carved from tree branches. The hand tools and edged weapons were made of rebar chipped out of the fallen highway overpass. There was nothing here. Corncob and pig bristle hairbrushes, snaggle-tongued bone combs, toothbrushes that were nothing more than furred-out twigs, small pieces of mirror, faded pre-dark photos, handmade wooden toys, curtains made of animal vertebrae. The pre-dark keepsakes consisted largely of broken small electronic items and parts of same, plastic and metal odds and ends that 150 years earlier would have been tossed aside. So far, no weapons or ammo had been found. The dirt farmers had all carried their blasters and cartridge belts into the tent. Furlong figured DeVille, this well-organized, had to have hidden away all the good stuff in a safe place, probably under armed guard. The Rousty crews just hadn't uncovered the main storehouse yet. Then again, nothing was going right today from the very beginning. Why should the salvaging be any different? When the first crackle of blaster fire erupted from inside the carny tent, Furlong didn't think anything of it. A few times before in other vills, right after the gas had been released and the front row started foaming at the mouth, some of the suckers at the rear had guessed what was going on. They'd held their breaths and charged the exit with drawn blasters, but the shooting had never lasted more than a minute, the gas overwhelming all. This time the blaster fire hadn't stopped. It dwindled momentarily, then resumed in a frenzy of back-and-forth reports.
Nuke in hell!